everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're talking lots of Bulls basketball as we welcome a very special guest to talk about the current state of the team, plus preview the remainder of the season. This should be a very fun and engaging interview, and I'm so glad that you're here joining us on today's show. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Get ready for the team's 2019 season as they celebrate their 20th anniversary. Purchase tickets right now at 708-489-2255. Again, that's 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. I can't tell you how excited I am to get to today's interview because right now, believe it or not, the Chicago Bulls are a major story in Chicago sports. And look, I know it sounds crazy to think that, but right now, when you look at the Bulls, you're seeing a team that has to rebuild. You're seeing a team that needs to tank. They need to lose and get the 1, 2, or 3 overall pick. I get that. But right now, the Bulls have won 4 of their past 5 games, and they've done it with great performances by 3 main players, Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Otto Porter of all people. Which begs the question, what has been going on to cause those 3 guys to do well? Why is this team clicking so well? And third and most importantly, why have they stopped tanking? They need a good draft pick. So these are very crucial questions that regard the present and the future of the Bulls organization, and they need answers, which is why today it's perfectly fitting to welcome our special guest onto the program. He's a Bulls beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. He's around the team 24/7, and he has inside information. He can tell us the true answers. He can explain what exactly is going on, which is why I'm very excited to welcome him onto the show today. So at this time, I want to thank you for your continued support with this podcast, and I hope you enjoy what's to come. It's now time for our special guest. He began his journalism career in the 1980s, covering high school sports and minor league baseball for the Beloit Daily News. And by 1990, he joined the Chicago Tribune, covering the Bulls' second championship three-peat. After 2 seasons on the Chicago Blackhawks beat, he went back to basketball, covering the Chicago Bulls once again starting in 2000. Today, he continues his work with the Tribune, serving as the beat writer for the Bulls. Please welcome KC Johnson to the show. KC, how are you doing today? And thank you for being here on the show.
Oh, I'm doing well, and it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, KC, I think it's only fitting that we start today by taking a look at last Friday night's game, where the Bulls defeated Atlanta 168-161 in quadruple overtime. Now, before we even get to performances and analysis, what was it like for you to be at that game, watching it continuously go into more overtime periods, and did it remind you of any other Bulls games that you've covered in the past?
Well, believe it or not, I've covered another 4 overtime game. They had one a few seasons ago under Fred Hoiberg. It was actually, coincidentally, the first of a back-to-back series of games, and everyone remembers the second game, which was in New York, because that's the night that Jimmy Butler told Fred Hoiberg he needed to coach harder. So that was a memorable story on the Bulls beat. But the night before that, they played a 4 overtime home game against the Pistons, in which Pau Gasol, Jimmy Butler, and Derrick Rose all had strong games. But even still, having covered one before, yes, Friday was transcendent, atypical, whatever adjective you want to use. You know, as you mentioned in your intro, I've been doing this a long time, but nights like that are something special, and you recognize it as such. You feel fortunate to be at such an event. I mean, it's the 3rd highest scoring game in NBA history, and your post-game interviews of coaches and players kind of, I want to say, ups in intensity a little bit, because it's you want to do the moment justice. I also will say that, obviously, working for a newspaper, we have deadline deadlines that people that work for websites are not constricted by. And it's kind of a funny feeling because you at one point move through a panic and stress stage about your deadline, and then you move through a resignation that the game's going to go past your deadline, and then you just move to the total acceptance that you're just not going to make deadline, and you just sit back and enjoy it and appreciate the moment for what it is, because it was pretty insane.
So let's talk about now performances on Friday. Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Otto Porter, they led the way, scoring a combined 109 points, accounting for about 65% of Bulls' total scoring. Are you at all surprised by how well these three guys have come together since the trade to lead this team to success? What are your thoughts on that?
Surprise might be too strong. I mean, obviously, it has happened quickly. Your first impression when you see Otto Porter play as a visiting writer is, nice player, good piece. But then when you see him up close every day, you recognize just how valuable he is, because he's just one of those guys who makes any team he's on better at both ends. He's just a smart, savvy, versatile player. He spaces the floor offensively. Obviously he's shooting at a high level right now, but even if that percentage comes down a little bit, defenses have to honor him because he's such a knockdown shooter. So that opens up space for Markkanen and LaVine to operate. And then defensively, he's just got, positional size at 6'8", and versatility to be able to guard multiple positions, which is essential in today's league. So, it's been nice to see what Porter has done. And then kudos to LaVine and Markkanen for taking advantage of a better talent and better lineup and playing at the level that they're playing at, because they're both playing lights out right now.
KC Johnson here on Sports Talk Chicago. And KC, speaking of this success, I mean, the Bulls, they get Otto Porter in this trade. They're playing above 500 basketball since. But at the same time, the rebuild isn't over. The Bulls still need some key young pieces via the draft in order to grow as a team. So with that in mind, should the Bulls continue to prioritize tanking or at least losing, or are you satisfied with the transition that they're going through right now?
I think I'm probably in the minority here. I don't like tanking. I understand why teams do it, and I understand how transcendent of a talent Zion Williamson potentially could be. I mean, there's no guarantees in the draft, but obviously he looks like an athletic marvel and will be the number one pick. I covered that for the first time. I've been doing this a long time, but last season was the first time that I was ever in that position where a team was actively trying to improve its draft lottery position. And quite frankly, I found it very unseemly. It's just weird to cover. I mean, they obviously made the highly publicized move of taking Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday out as starters after the All-Star break last season. And, it didn't really even work. I mean, they won games down the stretch when they signed Sean Kilpatrick, and then they ended up losing the coin flip with Sacramento and for draft lottery odds. And then, once the lottery ping pong ball settled, they finished with the seventh pick. Now, obviously, looks like they made a nice pick with Wendell Carter Jr. coming all the way from number seven, but I just don't like it. I get it, but I don't like it, and I'm fine with the Bulls trying to win games. Now, we'll see how they play these last 18 games, because Sunday's loss, home loss to the Hawks, they did something that they said that they would not do, and that was rest Otto Porter Jr. for load management. Now, obviously, the four overtime game on Friday night offered them the perfect excuse to do that. That's certainly going to be a storyline I'll be monitoring as we go down the stretch here. Has that opened a window, crossed the threshold? Will they do that more often with other players like LaVine and Markkanen, or was that just a one-off because of the craziness of the four overtime game? We'll see. But I personally just don't like it. I think getting LaVine and Markkanen playing at an all-star level and forming chemistry is just as important moving forward as anything else.
How difficult is it for you, being the Bulls beat writer, to come up with headlines and come up with stories every day knowing that a team like this is tanking? Like, I mean, you mentioned last year it was the first time you've seen a team actively trying to lose. So how difficult has it been for you yourself to cover a team like this knowing that each night the team's trying to lose and not win?
Well, they're not doing it this season. So yesterday was the first time, and I acknowledged it as such that they went against what they said they weren't going to do. And again, it's something I'm going to be monitoring over these last 18 games. To answer your question, last season it was weird. Yeah, I mean, how do you cover that? They were not optimizing their chances to win. Now they still won games. Like I said, Sean Kilpatrick, a nobody who's not even in the league right now, came in, signed late to a contract, and had some really hot games that helped them win some late season games. So it kind of backfired on them. But when they removed Lopez and Holiday from the starting lineup, it just went against everything I'd ever covered. I mean, I've covered some bad teams, following the second three-peat with those Tim Floyd teams, and those teams just lost because they were bad. So it was different to see a team that, you know, wasn't great but was competitive most nights kind of take the foot off the gas. It was, to answer your question, it was very hard to cover and odd to cover.
Now, I wanted to go back to the trade for a minute. Otto Porter, Jabari Parker, Bobby Portis. Who do you think won that trade? Because right now, Otto Porter has greatly exceeded his expectations. And in Washington, Portis and Parker have, for the most part, played about the same. Who's the winner of the trade in your mind looking at it right now?
I mean, I don't like doing winners and losers so quickly. I will say that, I think that the Bulls made a good move in the sense that Portis was clearly going to be a backup. Now, I thought he could be a valuable backup because he accepts his role, whether he starts or comes off the bench. He provides scoring off the bench. He can play four or five. I was probably higher on Portis than most. Obviously, the Jabari Parker experiment was a failed experiment here in Chicago. But look, they got a player better than they'll probably get in any player they could have gotten in free agency this summer. They got a starting three, which is as hard of a position to find a solid three as there is of the five in the NBA. And, you know, they solidified their lineup. To me, they've got four starting spots knocked down now with Levine, Porter, Markkanen, and Carter. Obviously, point guard Dunn has experienced some inconsistencies this season, and I do think they'll upgrade that position this offseason. But it certainly is looking – I mean, look, they're 6-2 in games Porter has played. So, to me, it's looking like a very nice trade for the Bulls.
And on the other hand, what were your impressions on the overall Jabari Parker saga? I mean, what were you expecting when the Bulls originally announced his signing back in July? And now that he's gone after less than a season, what do you make of the decision to bring him aboard in the first place?
It was a mistake, as simple as that. And to me, it was a mistake because they veered from what they said they were going to do. And this is, to me, a classic example of management and coaching having different jobs. So management to their credit, it's a mistake, but to their credit, similar to the Rondo and Wade signings, management is good at limiting their long-term commitments to risk. So it was a risk, it was an experiment, and it was a short-term one, so they got out of it, right? Even if they hadn't made the trade, they would have got out of it after this season. But look, management said, we understand he's not a small forward, we're going to try it anyway. We're going to just grab talent, young athletic talent, throw five guys out there, run up and down the court under Fred Hoiberg, and see what happens. Fred Hoiberg was like, hang on here. I'm coaching for my job. This guy's not a small forward. That's not where I'm playing him. So, you know, I respect how management didn't force the coaching staff to follow its philosophy, but that's where it started going south was, you know, they strayed from their philosophy almost immediately. They knew they were taking a flyer and trying to shoehorn him into the small forward position. And the coaching staff said, we're not doing that. So it went south quickly. And then obviously it went south further when Jim Boylan took over for Fred Hoiberg and took Jabari out of the rotation completely. Obviously Jim made it pretty clear publicly his issues with Jabari. He didn't think he was a good practice player. He didn't think he was committed at the defensive end, and you know, Jim's trying to establish a culture, so I don't fault Jim for icing him like he did. I personally, you know, did not fully understand it though, because to me, again, he's still one of your top five most talented players in your team, and when the offense was as poor as it was, I would have played him. But I'm also not privy to everything that goes on in the locker room. I know there's some concerns internally about Jabari affecting issues in the locker room, et cetera. So, again, it's ultimately going to go down as a failed experiment. But like the Wade situation, it was a short term commitment, and they're already out from it.
And you mentioned Jim Boylan, now obviously the new head coach for the Bulls. He's taken over as the team's permanent head coach, which is interesting as well. Some have said that this is a bit premature, as he's only coached 40 games with the team and hasn't particularly done well. What's been your evaluation of Boylan as a coach, and do you agree with the immediate security for next season?
I think that Jim has done exactly what he said he's going to do, and I know he's taken a lot of criticism, but if you go back to that incredibly tumultuous first week where he publicly challenged his team's toughness and conditioning, and then obviously had the high-profile incident where a couple players suggested not coming to practice, and there was 2 hours of team meetings on a Sunday following a franchise record loss to the Celtics. If you go back to those comments, Jim has done everything that he said he's going to do. He's going to teach players in practice. He's going to push them without being combative. He's going to hold them accountable. He's going to break down the offense to a crawl and then build it back up. So you cannot like Jim Boylan, but he's been incredibly transparent. And, what he has said he's going to do is happening. So, look, is he the best coach in the NBA? Probably not. Does he deserve a chance beyond the season? I personally think he's doing fine. I mean, the Bulls are not in a win-now mode. They're in the second season of a full rebuild. And Jim's passion and commitment and care is unquestioned. Now, he is unconventional. I know people roll their eyes at the Bulls across your chest comments, et cetera. He's got a little bit of a college kind of, rah-rah mentality to him. But trust me, I've known Jim for a long time. And, this is who he is, and this is not an act, and he's transparent. He's the same way privately as he is publicly. So I understand why they're committed to him for next season, and I'm curious to see how it plays out.
So, Casey, I think this move in regards to Boylan all goes back to the Garpax regime and adds to the long list of questionable decisions that have been made over the years. I mean, obviously people aren't happy with what's been going on. I believe there's even a protest scheduled for March 6th. Now, despite that, as the Bulls beat writer, being around the team 24/7, what are the players saying about their bosses and how they're handling the rebuild?
Well, players don't really talk about Gar and John. They have relationships with them, but it's not like we ask players, about their relationship with management, because most of the player stuff that we talk about is about on-court stuff, and that's obviously a coaching situation. I mean, I did ask Chris Dunn recently, what kind of feedback he's gotten from management, and he said he hasn't really got much of any. I mean, management has cordial relationships with the players throughout the season, but they mostly don't. They leave the day-to-day stuff to the coaching staff, and then have exit meeting interviews, obviously at the end of the season. So, and as far as the dislike for management, that's been a ongoing and long-standing thing, but I've maintained many times and written many times and quoted the, ownership level at times that they, ownership, the Reinsdorf family, believes in the roster construction ability of John and Gar. If you just look at when they took over in 03 for Jerry Krause, they completely flipped that roster within two seasons and built a team centered around draft picks like Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and Lou Aldang, who technically was a trade acquisition, but it was a draft day trade acquisition, and, built a team that never won a championship, but what had sustained success and advanced in the playoffs to the second round, and then obviously got lucky in the draft lottery and built another team constructed around Derrick Rose, and that team advanced to the conference finals. Now, look, I get it. They never won a championship. They've been able to hire five coaches, and they've only won five or six playoff series in 5 years. So most of their playoff appearances have been first-round exits. But I would probably question that, the assessment that they've made a lot of poor decisions over the years. I mean, you know, the Butler trade, let's just look at that one to use this one example. I mean, that was completely crushed at the time of the move. I think most people would acknowledge that it's turned out pretty well for the Bulls. I mean, Markkanen looks like he could be an all-star, and LaVine is playing at a high level. And you also have to, Dunn, you know, I don't think Dunn is, I think he's underwhelmed this season, but you also have to look in that trade is that they did it also to get bad. So Wendell Carter Jr. has to look, be considered part of that trade. So if you look at those four pieces for Jimmy Butler and Patton, who's, you know, Justin Patton, I think most people would be fine with that move. So, you know, I understand the fan dislike, but I'm curious to see how this rebuild plays out. I think right now the Bulls have some solid pieces, and I think this season has been obviously marred by injury.
When the rebuild ends, do you see Jim Boylan still being the coach of this team, or do you see the Bulls going out and getting someone else by the time this all ends, maybe in 2020 or 2021?
Now, that's a great question, and I don't have an answer, and I don't like to speculate on people's job futures, so I'm going to not give a prediction, but I think it's a valid question to ask and certainly one I'm going to be monitoring and paying attention to. I do think that, you know, there's potentially a theory where, you know, Jim is kind of a short-term guy to change the culture from what John Paxson did not like was happening in the end of Fred Hoiberg's tenure. But, you know, look, what if they win 50 games next season? Then doesn't Jim deserve an extension? I mean, these are speculative things I don't like to tread into because I like to see how they play out. I'll just acknowledge, I think it's certainly a valid question and a good point and something I'll be paying attention to as a beat writer.
And Casey, before we let you go today, I have to ask, is it true that you've never worn a backpack when doing your work? Because I've heard about this rumor, and I'll have to admit, it's hard to believe knowing that you're a beat writer and you don't have a backpack, you need a computer, you know, pens, all kinds of stuff like that. So is it true? And if so, why is that?
It was true for many years, and it was kind of a thing. And I had the old-fashioned, like, briefcase computer bag, and then I would, it also became kind of a funny thing where I was such an experienced traveler that I would pack just an overnight set of clothes in a plastic jewel bag and take that as my carry-on. But I covered the Ryder Cup in an off-season, whenever that was, here in Chicago, and they gave me a nice media backpack, which it serves as my moving office now. So I'm fully a backpack carrying member of the media now.
Well, Casey, thank you so much for your time today. Great insights as always, and hope to have you on again soon.
All right, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What an honor it was to have Casey Johnson on the show today as we talk with him about some Chicago Bulls news, the team's successes as of late, plus his amazing journalism career. And what I enjoy the most about KC is that he has so much information, he knows so much about the team, but at the same time, he paints a great picture of what's going on. And that explains, too, why he's a great writer. He finds ways to interpret this information he has into amazing stories and amazing headlines for the Chicago Tribune. So again, I really appreciate KC's time, and I hope you enjoyed this interview. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglua. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. And finally, if you enjoyed today's podcast, tune in to my new radio show every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. You'll still hear my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions. Plus, we'll add special segments and, of course, very special guests on each show. Again, that's every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening in to today's show, and have a great day.